Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the March 5th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Arcola City Council distributes surplus TIF funds to taxing bodies by Ben Crane. The Arcola City Council passed two resolutions Monday at their meeting distributing 25% of the city's tax increment financing, TIF, district funds to other taxing bodies per the intergovernmental agreement signed in 2014. Resolution 25R2 declared $140,000 in surplus from TIF number 1, while Resolution 25R3 declared $195,000 in surplus to be returned to the county for disbursement to the taxing bodies. An ordinance that was on the agenda, number 25S2, was tabled due to city administrator not yet receiving back the paperwork from city attorney Andrew Petty. Two requests for proposals were sent out, one regarding the demolition of a house on West Main, and the other for the construction of the baseball-softball concession building. The next article, Villa Grove City Council. State drops grocery tax, city may put it back on. The first item discussed at the February 24th Villa Grove City Council meeting was the city replacing the 1% state grocery tax with a local tax. Prices wouldn't be affected, but the city wouldn't lose revenue. City Attorney Mark Miller noted that once the deadline for passing the ordinance had expired, the city would have no mechanism to replace the lost revenue, and the council reached a consensus to include the ordinance on the next meeting agenda for a vote. Administrator Jacqueline Athey noted that an ad for the sale of the West Vine Street property had been run in local papers. She also noted the candidate debate for mayor had been moved from March 5th to March 12th due to the 4th being Ash Wednesday. The debate will take place at the Recreation Center at 7 p.m. She said she had spent the bulk of her week working on budget items and that department heads had been working on their budgets as well. She then noted that she had been preparing TIF documents that would be attending a conference at the end of the week. Chief Cole Tibbetts then noted that the police officer candidate who had been sponsored by Villa Grove had dropped out of the PTI and that the position would once again be posted. He also noted that there had been a spat of ATM thefts in the area and that local law enforcement agencies were working on the case as an active investigation. Finally, he noted that with the return to duty of his injured officer, the student resource officer, SRO, had been able to resume his post at the high school. Director Robert Ree then noted that the youth volleyball season had ended and that over 1,500 people had scanned their IDs for entry into the rec center over the past 2 months. He then reported that he was working on his budget, that spring sports registration was ongoing, and that sponsorship letters for spring sports had been sent out, and there were some issues with one of the scoreboards in the rec center, and a replacement was on its way. Director Mark McSell then noted that he had requested quotes for the demo of the Vine Street property and for the treatment of ball fields for spring sports. He also noted that cleanup of the concrete pile at the industrial park was ongoing and that it was maybe an eighth of the way completed. The council then reached a consensus of Friday, June 27th, as the date of the Freedom Celebration. Next, the council reached a consensus allowing Director McSell to solicit bids for a pair of sidewalks on Main Street, the purchase of LED speed warning lights for the main entries into Villa Grove, and for the completion of the IDOT-CVG-ADA transition plan. The council then discussed the TIF application process and the tree service burning laws with Attorney Miller before moving to a closed session for the discussion of personnel at 7:51 p.m. After coming out of closed session at 8 p.m. and finding no other business, the council adjourned at that time. The next article, ROSC survey identifies health and recovery needs in Douglas County. Douglas County is at a critical juncture in addressing its health and recovery service gaps, according to a newly revised community needs assessment connected by Our House under the ROSC Region 4 initiative. The study, led by ROSC Coordinator Lindsay Reedy and ROSC Program Supervisor Jenna Hayes, evaluates the county's available resources, identifies significant gaps, and proposes strategies for improvements. ROSC stands for Recovery-Oriented Systems of Care. Overview of Douglas County. A predominantly rural community with a population of 19,000, Douglas County has 6,000 school-age youth attending its 15 public and private schools. The county has only 3 outpatient treatment facilities and no inpatient centers, representing a major challenge for individuals seeking recovery services. The county hosts 1 ROSC council and 1 Douglas County Area Coalition, both of which play key roles in fostering community-driven solutions. Key findings, gaps in service. The needs assessment identified several critical service gaps across 5 main categories: health promotion, prevention, intervention harm reduction, treatment, and recovery supports. These gaps include health promotion, limited dissemination of information about health and recovery services, prevention, insufficient school-based support for students and families affected by substance use, interview harm reduction, low awareness of medication-assisted recovery, MAR, and NARCAM challenges in accessing harm reduction programs, and the absence of a safe passage program, treatment, difficulty finding healthcare providers offering MAR. Recovery support, lack of recovery housing, insufficient bilingual recovery services for Spanish-speaking individuals, and limited in-person recovery support options. Community survey insights. A survey conducted as part of the needs assessment revealed mixed perceptions about available support for individuals struggling with substance use. 65.9% of respondents believe some support exists but more is needed. 67% find harm reduction programs difficult to access. 74.4% agree that transitional housing programs could significantly reduce substance use issues. 57.4% support the establishment of a drug court program, while 57.1% favor a safe passage program. 81.7% recognize GED programs in jail as beneficial for recovery and reintegration. SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Strengths. Active community organizations include the Douglas Area Coalition and ROSC Council. Strong public health initiatives, including mental health and dental care programs. Engagement in harm reduction programs, including DOPP sites and naloxone distribution. Weaknesses, lack of recovery housing options. Limited culturally appropriate services for non-English speakers. Stigma surrounding substance use disorders preventing individuals from seeking help. Opportunities, expansion of anti-stigma campaigns and peer support networks. Establishment of a drug court program to reduce recidivism and provide alternative sentencing. Development of bilingual support materials to address language barriers. Threats. Limited transportation options affecting service accessibility. Economic instability and potential funding reductions for essential recovery programs. Rising prevalence of fentanyl and synthetic opioids increasing overdose risks. Proposed community action steps. The assessment outlines several key strategies to address identified gaps. Enhancing communication. Increase outreach through social media, community centers, and faith-based organizations to improve public awareness of health services. Strengthening prevention programs. Partner with schools to implement evidence-based substance use prevention initiatives. Improving harm reduction access. Expand harm reduction services, including MAR education, and implement a safe passage program in collaboration with law enforcement. Expanding recovery housing and services. Develop transitional housing programs and enhance bilingual recovery support services. Supporting employment and education for individuals in recovery. Introduce job training programs and GED opportunities in local correctional facilities. A call for collaboration. The report highlights the need for increased partnerships at the local, state, and federal levels to ensure sustainable progress. Recommended actions for state funders include allocating funds for public health communication initiatives, increasing support for the school-based prevention programs, providing grants to incentivize healthcare providers to offer MAR services, funding transitional housing projects and bilingual recovery services. And the conclusion, Douglas County has made strides in addressing substance use recovery, but significant gaps remain. By leveraging community collaboration, increasing funding, and implementing targeted interventions, the county can build a more comprehensive support system for individuals in need. The findings of this assessment underscore the importance of ongoing commitment and strategic action to foster long-term recovery success. And the last front page story, TCHS gears up for energetic production of Mamma Mia by Ben Crane. The Tuscola High School Drama Club is gearing up for their production of Mamma Mia on March 13th through the 15th at 7 p.m. and March 16th at 2 p.m. All of my leads are basketball players, both boys and girls, which has made scheduling incredibly difficult, said Joanna Steffens, the drama director at the Tuscola High School. The boys are still playing and the girls are just finishing their season last week, so we haven't had a full rehearsal with everyone present. We've been working in chunks using weekends and late night practices after games. Despite these challenges, Steffens believes in keeping opportunities open for student athletes. Most of the kids in the show are involved in something else. If I didn't allow athletes to participate, we wouldn't be able to put on productions like Mamma Mia. Regarding the cast, Steffens highlighted their experience and dedication. Luckily, most of them are juniors and seniors, so they've done this before and know what it takes. I'm confident we'll come together in the next few weekends. With the high school's recent renovations and the new Stage 301, the technology there isn't her concern. It's the new online ticketing system. I set it all up myself, and while I'm not terrible with technology, dealing with money and ticket sales online felt like a whole new challenge, Stephens admitted, about implementing an online ticketing system. She found reassurance in the system's reliability, stating, "It's a program made by a high school theater teacher, and everyone who has used it loves it." The response has been strong. Thursday is by far our most popular night so far, with fewer than 50 tickets remaining, Stephens noted. While some tickets may still be available at the door, she's monitoring sales closely. "The great thing is that students can practice on their own, and I can choreograph at home," Stephens said about using professionally recorded rehearsal tracks. However, she noted a key challenge. Mamma Mia has a lot of dialogue embedded within the music. If an actor's timing is off, it can feel awkward waiting for the song to start. We've had to put extra focus on nailing the dialogue transitions. Stephens has encouraged students who have never performed before to join the production. "I have 7 basketball players participating in a single scene, a fun, energetic moment where they'll all be dancing in swimsuits and flippers," she shared. "It's hilarious and brings an audience that might not usually attend a musical." She also discovered new talent among the leads. "2 of my lead girls have never been in a show before, and they just nailed their auditions. It makes me wonder how many other students out there have hidden talents they haven't explored." The production involves 40 to 50 students, including backstage crew and technical assistants. The school's new auditorium has been a valuable addition, but Stephens acknowledged there's still a learning curve when it comes to lighting, sound, and projections. Stephens hinted at a special surprise for the audience. In Mamma Mia, the song Waterloo plays at the end. During that would be curtain call. "We've reached out to a few teachers to make guest appearances similar to what we had when staff members sang Beauty School Dropout in Greece. We had older community members approach me at the basketball game worried about the online system. I assured her we'd find a way to help," Stephens said, noting that accommodations were available for those uncomfortable with digital purchasing. With the show fast approaching, Stephens reflected on the process. "This is the point where I start getting stressed, but in about a week, I'll remember this always happens and it always works out," she said with a laugh. "We've got a great cast, a fun show, and a lot of energy," Stefan said. "It's going to be something special." We'll move now to the obituaries. Michael Dennis Jayo, 73, of Villa Grove, passed away at 4:34 p.m. on Tuesday, February 25, 2025, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. on Sunday, March 9th, at the Southern Baptist Church in Arthur. Pastor Doug Davis will officiate. Visitation will be held prior to the service from 2 to 3 p.m. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Pamela Pam Teresa Drake, 64, of Sullivan, formerly of Arcola, passed away at 5:10 p.m. on Friday, February 28, 2025, at St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital in Effingham. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, March 7th, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola. The Reverend Michael Lewis will officiate. Burial will be in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation will be held prior to the funeral from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the funeral home. Mariah Faith Kunz was born at 6:13 a.m. and passed away at 10:19 a.m. on Friday, February 28, 2025 at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Visitation and funeral services were held Sunday, March 2nd at the Irvin and Loretta Yoder Residence, Rural Arthur. Bishop Nelson Diener officiated. Beryl was in the Bear Creek Cemetery in rural Tuscola. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with the arrangements. Surrounded by her loving family, Carolyn Ann Kobalik-Yance entered eternal rest on February 21, 2025 at the age of 85 in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania. She faced health challenges through much of her life, many from the ALS in recent years. A vigil was held February 28th at Nolan Fidel Funeral Home in Aston, Pennsylvania. The funeral mass was held March 4th at St. Stephen the Apostle Church, Glen Mills, Pennsylvania. Contact Joyne's Funeral Home in Villa Grove for a day and time of burial at St. Mary's Cemetery in Pisodum. In lieu of flowers, donations were made in Carolyn's name to St. Thomas the Apostle Church. Jeffrey Allen Wilson, 59, of Tuscola, died at Carl Hospital February 26, 2025, after battling a long illness. His wife and children were by his side. Per Jeff's wishes, there will be no services beside a celebration of life at a later date. In lieu of flowers, donations to help with expenses would be graciously appreciated. Hilligosh Rader Funeral Home is assisting the family. Mary Vibert Blaney, 81, of Mount Vernon, passed away on Monday, February 24, 2025, at OSF St. Anthony Medical Center in Rockford. A funeral service will be held at 12 noon on Saturday, March 8th, at Living Hope Fellowship Church in Villa Grove, with a visitation beginning an hour prior to the service. Burial will follow at the Fairland Cemetery. Richard D. Wade, 98, of Lombard, formerly of Tuscola and Sebring, Florida, passed away on Sunday, February 23rd, 2025. A private family gathering will be held later in 2025. Memorial donations in Richard's name may be made to the Greater Chicago Food Depository. He was definitely one of the good guys. C.W. Carol Wayne Kinney, 77, of Champaign, formerly of Arthur, passed away on February 25, 2025, at St. Elizabeth's Hospital, O'Fallon. Funeral services were held Tuesday, March 4th at Schrader Funeral Home, Arthur, with a visitation starting an hour prior. Masonic rites were performed prior to the funeral. Burial was in the Arthur Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Prairie Lands Council, Boy Scouts of America, and Illinois Police Association, Kickapoo Division. Richard Lewis Dick Scuda, age 93, devoted husband, loving father, cherished grandfather and great-grandfather, loyal son and brother, and man of faith, passed away peacefully at home in Tuscola on Tuesday evening, February 25, 2025. He was surrounded by members of his adoring family. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, March 8th at Eagle Mountain Assembly of God, 401 East Sale Street, Tuscola, with the Reverend Darren Elder officiating. Burial will follow at the Tuscola Township Cemetery with military graveside rites accorded. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 7th at the Hilligoss Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola. Visitation will also be held 1 hour prior to the service at the church on Saturday. The next article, Tuscola North Ward teacher Ron O'Hearn retiring after 25 years of inspiring students, by Ben Crane. After 25 years of dedicated service, elementary school teacher Ron O'Hearn is preparing to retire at the end of this school year. Known for his hands-on approach to education, he has spent decades shaping young minds and making learning an interactive experience. O'Hearn began his teaching career in 1989, spending 2 years at Erie Catholic before teaching for 9 years at Chrisman. In 2000, he joined the North Ward, where he's been a staple in the community ever since. Beyond the classroom, he's also coached junior high basketball, varsity softball and football, as well as youth sports like soccer and t-ball. One of Hearn's most memorable projects is the interactive Native American presentation. His third grade students studied three different Native American tribes, the Haida from the Northwest, the Cheyenne from the Prairie Lands, and Navajo from the desert. Using their vocabulary words, they wrote and performed their own version of the Three Little Pigs, incorporating historical elements to showcase how each tribe adapted to their environment. The students also created their own sets, featuring a teepee, a wooden log house, and sturdy hogan, illustrating the different structures of each tribe's housing. Parents and half of the school were invited to watch, turning the project into a community event that celebrated both learning and creativity. If students are actively engaged and enjoying themselves, they absorb the information better, O'Hearn explained. In social studies and science, we do a lot of hands-on activities. We've done geological digs, built bridges out of newspaper, even had a swimming pool in the classroom for experiments. This passion for interactive learning has led to numerous grants, including a recent $500 grant that will fund an outdoor geological dig for the entire third grade. The project, which was initially designed for his classroom alone, will now benefit all third grade students as a farewell gift before he retires. His approach has made a lasting impact on his students. Parents often tell him how much their children look forward to being in his class. Some initially feared his reputation as a times table teacher, but later appreciated the foundation that he provides. Years after leaving his class, students and parents alike thank him for installing essential skills. "I don't just want my students to learn content," he said. "I want them to develop skills that will take them throughout their lives. If I can plant a seed of curiosity and perseverance, then I've done my job." As he approaches his final months in the classroom, he reflects on what he will miss most. "The kids, 100%, he said, "their curiosity, their energy, and their excitement about learning, they're pure and they're rewarding to be part of this journey." Although he's retiring, he won't be leaving entirely. He plans to return as a substitute teacher, ensuring he still gets his kid fix. Many students affectionately refer to him as Scooby-Doo because of his signature Scooby-Doo attire. "The kids are everything to me. If they weren't, I would be out in a lake somewhere fishing," O'Hearn said with a laugh. The next article, affordable health screenings coming to Arthur. Residents living in and around Arthur, Illinois can learn about their risk for cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, diabetes, and other chronic serious conditions with affordable screenings by Lifeline Screening. Arthur Community Building will host this community event on March 24th. The site is located at 120 East Progress Street in Arthur. Screenings can check for the level of plaque buildup in your arteries related to the risk for cardiovascular disease, stroke, and overall vascular health, HDL and LDL cholesterol levels, diabetes risk, kidney and thyroid function, and more. Screenings are affordable and convenient. Free parking is also available. There is a cost, but consultants will work with you to create a package that is right for you based on your age and risk factors. Call 1-877-237-1287 or visit our website, www.lifelinescreening.com. Pre-registration is required. The next article, Regional Individual and Group Insurance Plans Discontinuing in 2026, out of Urbana, Illinois. Carle Health announced that as of January 1, 2026, subsidiaries Health Alliance and First Carolina Care will cease operating all lines of business except Medicare Advantage. Throughout the remainder of 2025, the health plans will maintain operations to support claims processing and meet ongoing business needs, regulatory mandates, and contractual obligations. Health Alliance has been a long-standing partner of Carle Health and its mission to serve patients and health plan members since 1989. First Carolina Care joined the organization in 2020. In recent years, the health insurance industry has changed dramatically, particularly for provider-owned insurers. Because of this, health plans like Health Alliance and First Carolina Care have struggled to achieve operational and financial efficiency. Medical inflation, rising prescription drug costs, increased utilization of healthcare services, higher volumes of chronic medical conditions, coupled with an increased demand for technology and broad networks, have placed considerable financial strain on these organizations. While Health Alliance and First Carolina Care have worked diligently over the past few years to grow to a size that might overcome these competitive disadvantages, they have not been able to reach a financially viable level to compete effectively in today's environment. Our commitment to the communities we serve requires a constant evaluation of the organization so we can continue to set the standard of excellence in healthcare, James C. Leonard, MD, Carle Health President and Chief Executive Officer, said. Carle Health has had to make decisions that enable us to better focus on our core services built around the health and well-being of patients. We recognize that in today's health insurance environment, our health plans no longer successfully compete. And Carle Health must effectively utilize our resources to meet changing needs of customers. The organization has begun communicating with employees, customers, and impacted partners as they prepare for the change in the coming months. Operational leaders are working to ensure all necessary regulatory requirements are met and to facilitate the adjustments necessary to continue serving members seamlessly through the calendar plan year. We are so grateful for this commitment of all the health plan employees will continue to serve customers as we navigate this transition. They have consistently brought innovative solutions, unique programming, and unmatched customer service to improve the health outcomes of those we serve for decades, and that impact is felt by members across the country, Sinead Madigan, Health Alliance President, said. Our vision for the future is clear as Carle Health reinforces our commitment to excellent clinical care, Dr. Leonard said. We're proud to have been a part of the health journey of countless individuals and families as we have served communities with medically informed health coverage for the past 40 years and will continue to earn the trust of patients and families as we move forward. Making the necessary decisions to safeguard our long-term viability is critical as we remain focused on an enduring partner to patients and communities we serve. Membership information will continue to be available through the Halley MyChart member platform beyond the end of the year. Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, issued the following statement following Health Alliance announced their plan to cease operations by 2026. I am shocked, stunned, and saddened to learn of this. The affected employees, their families, and tens of thousands of local insureds who rely on Health Alliance for access to care are foremost on my mind. My office will stand to try to help in any way we can in job training and recruitment efforts for the impacted employees. Moreover, I've already reached out to the state's CMS director, who is in charge of the group health insurance contract under Governor Pritzker, to see what health care options will be available come open enrollment in May for the countless families who currently utilize Health Alliance for their insurance provider. Continuity of care and access to trusted physicians must be the priority as thousands of local members will now be forced to find new insurance carrier. Being able to choose your medical care team going forward is an absolute imperative. The next article, U of I program teaches people about dementia and Alzheimer's disease. On Saturday, March 1st, Jerry Burcham from the University of Illinois Extension Office shared a program and information at the Arthur Public Library on recognizing dealing with people with dementia and or Alzheimer's. Dementia is the general term for those dealing with memory issues, including Alzheimer's disease. In 2024, 7 million people in the United States were diagnosed with Alzheimer's and 11 million family members are providing unpaid care. The following paragraphs outline some of the information provided in the program. People with dementia may have the following symptoms, including memory loss, confusion with time and or place, issues with problem solving, making poor decisions, communication difficulties, difficulty with familiar tasks, changes in mood, and withdrawal. Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia, accounting for 60 to 70% of dementia cases. The majority of people with Alzheimer's are 65 or older when diagnosed. Common behaviors associated with Alzheimer's are anger, aggression, paranoia, inappropriate behavior, and language getting lost, repetitive actions, problem sleeping, sundowning, crying out, and loud verbalizations. These behaviors are a problem when the safety or well-being of the individual or other person is compromised or a trigger cannot be identified. Communication is the key when dealing with individuals with dementia. Some important things to remember are to treat the person as an adult, address the person by name, and identify yourself, eliminating environmental distractions. Look at the person when speaking. Be aware of the body language, both yours and the individual. Give one-step directions, use nonverbal communications, focus on feelings, use humor, and use their personal history, their likes and interests when communicating and caregiving. Some things not to do when communicating with a person with dementia. Don't correct the person. Don't accuse the individual of lying, but respond to their feelings of fear and insecurity. Don't take rudeness personally. Don't argue. Don't use negative statements. And don't talk about the person as if they're not present. It is important to remember that everyone has six fundamental needs, especially those who have dementia. Those needs are love, comfort, identity, occupation, inclusion, and attachment. Burcham stressed that those who are providing care for dementia or Alzheimer's patients should not hesitate to ask for help through respite care or other resources. For more information, call Sherry Burcham at 217-543-3755. The next article, Social Security announces workforce and organizational plans. Consistent with recent executive orders issued by the White House, the Social Security Administration will continue to implement efficiencies and reduce costs with a renewed focus on mission-critical work for the American people. The agency plans to reduce the size of its bloated workforce and organizational structure with a significant focus on function and employees who do not directly provide mission-critical services. Social Security recently set a staffing target of 50,000, down from the current level of 57,000 employees, rumoring about a 50% reduction is false. Initial steps to reduce the workforce include offering a limited number of employees the opportunity to leave the agency under the Deferred Resignation Program and Voluntary Early Retirement, VERA. The agency announced all employees that Social Security will soon implement agency-wide organizational restructuring that will include significant workforce reductions. The announcement includes offering voluntary separation incentive payments, VSIP, to all employees on a first-come, first-served basis, and expanding VERA to all employees. Both VERA and VSIP require employees to opt in and to separate from the agency by specific dates. Social Security anticipates that much of the staff reduction need to reach the targets of 50,000 will come from retirement, VSIP, and resignation. Additional reductions will come from reduction in force, RIF, actions that could include abolishment of organizations and positions. RIF can also include directed reassignments from one position to another position in the agency. Agencies are required to submit their RIF plan to the Office of Personnel Management by March 13, 2025. No date has been said when RIF might begin after the OPM approves a plan. SSA has operated with a regional structure consisting of 10 offices, which is no longer sustainable. The agency will reduce the original structure and all agency components down to 4 regions. The organizational structure at headquarters is also outdated and inefficient. SSA will now have a seven deputy commissioner level organization. These steps prioritize cut consumer service by streamlining redundant layers of management, reducing non-mission critical work, and potential reassignment of employees to customer service positions. Also supporting this priority is looking for efficiencies and other opportunities to reduce costs across all spending categories, including information technology and contractor spending. SSA is committed to ensure the plan has a positive effect on the delivery of Social Security services. Time for a couple of briefs, free Lenten study and soup lunch. The Tuscola United Church of Christ, 114 East Pembroke Street, Tuscola, located one block north of the post office, is having a Lenten video series based on the Gospel of John. The video presenter is Amy Jill Levine, and there will be some additional teaching by the Reverend Ralph Deal. The class will be held on Mondays from 11:15 to 11:52 in the church sanctuary, followed by a soup lunch in the church basement. There is no cost, and no offering will be taken. That is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkingsay. Goodbye, and see you again next week.